Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone from the entertainment world. This week, we're going one-on-two. My guests today are director Mike Austin and his wife, Lisa. They are working on an exciting new project, Cradle to the Grave. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Mike, I'd like to start with you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Cradle to the Grave? What is it?
Well, Cradle to the Grave is a new paranormal TV series that we came up with the concept for. The key thing that makes us different from the other shows that are out there that we thought was lacking is two parts. Number one, it's all female investigators, which nobody else is doing. And we felt that there was a need for that because, you know, just of like the women's intuition and the fact that most people will tell you that they think that, you know, women are more sensitive about things than men are. And the other part of it is the fact that we actually have on the four-panel staff who do the investigations, two of them are actually nurses. One of them, my wife, is a delivery nurse, and then she has a coworker who works in the neonatal department. And so hence the title came from Cradle to the Grave with them doing deliveries. And so they're actually bringing, you know, life and souls into the world. And this is kind of following to see what happens after the course happens and you go through life and then you exit.
Where did the idea actually originate from?
Well, actually, my wife has been always interested in the paranormal and has felt that she's sensitive about this stuff. And we had done some, just for fun, over the years, we had gone to haunted places and things like that. And it just kind of evolved from that with her being in that background, and I have a background in film and theater, and the two just kind of ended up melding together.
You know, Lisa, most people go to amusement parks for fun, but apparently you and Mike prefer haunted places.
Yes, actually we do. And it's so funny because people have an unusual reaction to that. They're like, you do this on purpose? I'm like, oh, yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, we've done this for years because we've gone to the Stanley Hotel in Colorado, which was the basis of The Shining by Stephen King. And we've gone to the Gold Hill Hotel in Nevada, which is like the oldest hotel in the Gold Rush country in Nevada. And, yeah, we do that intentionally. We've done that for a long time, taking cameras and recorders and things like that, because I like what he was saying, for a long time I felt very sensitive. It was kind of a weird thing as a kid, feeling, you know, just things around me that I could get sensations and things like that. And so now it's become a hobby. And then once we start doing that as a hobby and then seeing this the shows on TV, there was a little bit of a frustration factor because the shows on TV are very much male-driven. And I was like, you know, I think women could do this on a different level, a better level. And I was like, you know, let's try this. It'd be interesting to put this together and see what happens.
This has nothing to do with Cradle to the Grave, but a personal question. The hotel that they used for the backdrop of The Shining, is it as creepy in real life as it was portrayed on the movie?
You know, honestly, that hotel to me is the most awesome hotel. Love it. I would go there as many times as I could. It's really interesting because they do a haunted tour. And when we went there and we did the tour and we met a few people that specifically picked a room in the hotel that was featured in Ghost Hunters, that when Ghost Hunters was there, that when they had a camera position, that there was a water glass that shattered just by itself while he was sleeping. And they picked that room, and we got to talking and stuff. And it's like, oh, you know, we're here for the same reason. And we hooked up, and later that night, and I know people get really weird about Ouija and spirit boards and whatever, but we did a Ouija board session in that room, and it was crazy active. And so we had just a really an amazing time at that hotel. Go there anytime. It is very active. There's a lot of energy there. And, you know, and it's funny because one of the stories from that hotel is that one of the active spirits is an Irish gentleman that did a lot of investment in that area, stole money from people, that he likes women. And he is active enough that they won't let women staff, like maids, work in a certain floor of the hotel because they say that he pinches and grabs them. And right, I mean, that's crazy, but he was the one talking to us on the spirit board because when all of us girls were working on the board, he would talk to us, and we switched to all the guys, all the husbands and boyfriends, and he wouldn't talk to them. And then we switched back, and he would talk to us. And so it was pretty funny.
Mike, a little bit of humor for you. Is there any truth in the rumor that you actually drive around in a white hearse with the license plate Ecto-1?
No, that's a show that's already been done. It's a movie that's been done before.
I'm just joking with you.
I think they're doing another one. They've got another Ghost Busters that's coming out shortly, I think.
You mentioned that two of the four investigators, your wife Lisa and another lady, are both nurses. What about the other two investigators? What kind of background do they have?
Her name is Jennifer, and she's very similar to Lisa in the respect that she has had a gift all of her life. And when she was given the opportunity and heard about this, showed a strong interest in wanting to try to own those crafts. And then we have one young person who's essentially in training. Her name is Chelsea, and so she's in her early 20s, and she thinks she's gifted too, but wanted to get involved in this to pursue to see if she thinks that she has any further abilities in it.
No, we wanted to try to give a wide base on as far as our experiences and where we live and exposure and things like that because, you know, Renee and I, we have our professional experiences as far as nurses. Jennifer, she manages a child daycare center, so she's very exposed as far as children and that type of thing. And then Chelsea, too, she's a college student. But I'm originally from Texas. Chelsea lives in Texas, but I'm out here in California. And then Jenny lives in Kentucky. Renee's out here in California. But, you know, our bases are very diverse. And so that was something, too, we thought would be unique as far as bringing together people not necessarily from the same area and exposure and so forth, and just a unique and widespread what our exposures are life-wise and so forth.
One of the things that springs into my mind is that there's a bit of a dichotomy. You've got the very hard science of health and medicine. Clearly you have put in a good deal of time and effort to you know, learn the hard science, shall we say. And yet the, you know, the paranormal is a soft science, maybe that's the wrong word, not so well understood, not so well defined. Is it difficult reconciling the two areas?
Actually, I don't have really a hard time reconciling the two because, yes, medicine and what I do as a nurse is a hard science, but in actuality, it's not. It's a continuing, changing science. We talk about that amongst ourselves, that every few years, the rules change according to research and data and things that we find out, that we always have to adapt, that it's a continually changing thing. And so with paranormal, I look at it as it still is a science. We just don't necessarily have as much data or background to support it like what we do with medicine right now. That's what we're trying to do, is get the information to get that on a different level or even more of an equal level than what we do on medicine, because in medicine we continually see things that don't make sense, and you know, it's an educated guess always on what we're doing, and we see things that, you know, people that we pretty much chalk up, they're done, that we can't do anything for them, and they survive and live, and we can't explain why. Okay, paranormal is not necessarily that different. We can't explain it necessarily. We just don't have the data to support it, and so that's kind of where we're wanting to kind of step in and do that, to gather evidence, you know, and research it to try to support the things that we can explain. Because, you know, in actuality, in paranormal, that in the research, as far as asking people, do you believe in it? Most people do, especially women. And again, that's where with us approaching it with a female team is that most women do believe in it. We just don't necessarily have the science data to support it. So let's try to do that.
I think you make a good point. You know, medicine is a hard science, but it's not like a Pythagoras triangle, you know, where pretty much it's proved. You know, we know almost everything there is to know about a Pythagoras triangle. We don't know everything there is to know in medicine. You know, I'm sure that there's not a lot of useful leeches anymore in the modern hospital.
You say that, but that's something that some hospitals are going back to, is leeches to help with wound care. Because if you do the leeches, it helps to restore blood flow to wounds and things like that. So, unusually, that's something we're coming back to.
Oh, Lord, I put my foot in it again. Okay, I'm going to go back to Mike. As I understand it, the pilot is done. Really, I have two questions about the pilot. What sort of reaction are you getting? And can you share a little bit about what the subject of the pilot is?
Well, first off, the response that we've been getting has been overwhelmingly positive, which obviously I've been very happy to hear. To give you a little bit about the actual pilot itself, we shut down a hotel out here in California, in Grass Valley, California. The name of the hotel is the Holbrook, and it was originally built in the 1850s, and we were the first investigative team to actually go in and shut down the hotel for an evening. paranormal search. And one of the reasons that we went ahead and picked the hotel is that supposedly, there are shafts that come out where the miners used to come from working down and getting the gold and silver right after the gold rush. That's where most of that got started over, where people originally think it started in San Francisco. It actually started over in that area. But anyway, people could exchange their gold right there, and they're claiming that a bunch of people would get shanghaied and murdered for their cash and gold. And one of the things I was wanting to do with this new series was to try to go to places that had not been investigated before. And that was one of the things that intrigued me about it, was the fact, the place is 160 years old, and if I've got people who are sensitive, because apparently I don't think I am, because I wasn't sensing the same things that the girls were. We did get stuff on film that I can't explain, and I also got audio stuff that I absolutely cannot explain. Because candidly, I thought I was going to go over and film, for 8 or 10 hours and have 40 hours worth of film with the different cameras, and nothing was going to come from it. But quite to the contrary, we did capture some things.
And what sort of size team do you use on a project like that? I mean, I would assume that the larger the team, the harder it becomes to get sensible data.
Well, that was the other way that I looked at this. And again, I'm kind of going into this blind because, like you're talking about it being a soft science, I don't know how this works. But my thinking was to use as small a film crew as possible. And so we did it with a total of just 7 people, and that includes the 4 female investigators. We had a sound guy, and then we had 2 cameramen. But my thinking was is that the less disturbing that you were going into it, the better chance you had of possibly making some type of contact and communication. And then on the other side of that too, when you're listening to like audio tapes and things that you've recorded, by having fewer people on the premises, it made it much easier for me to try to distinguish if I heard a noise or a voice or something, to figure out where people were in the building so we could discard, that noise is because they were doing an investigation down in room 9, so I know that the audio that I got is tainted and it was actually part of the crew members. And that way, when we actually did get stuff, I could take it very seriously. That we know for a fact that there was only 7 people in the building, and I've accounted for where everybody is, but yet we have sound coming from over here. And that was the kind of things that I was trying to do a scientific thing about it to disprove anything, so that if we had anything left over, then I thought it would be potential proof that we did get something.
Right. I just out of idle curiosity, I presume that the Holbrook is an operating entity.
Yes, it is. Actually, a little history about it. It has a saloon built into it, which is the longest continuously running saloon west of the Mississippi. It's like I said, it's over in a little town called Grass Valley, and I know that Lisa would know better about the history about it because she researched, a series of places. And then we went, and again, I was looking at it from a cinematography viewpoint. We went to some of the different hotels and locations she picked, and that, aesthetically, that was the one that I wanted to shoot at if she felt she was going to be able to get something at that location, because I just liked the way that the building looked. It literally looked like you're walking back in history.
I guess I didn't phrase the question very well, or at all. I find it, I'm curious, you can't just walk into a hotel and say, hey, I'd really like to, shoot a TV show in here. How about closing down for, the night?
Actually, we did that. That's true.
It's a little more complicated. It's a little more complicated, but yes, for the most part, excuse me, we found we decided on a couple three. We narrowed it down to two or three places, and that was my first choice. And I'm going to have to give ghost hunters credit for this. They've given some credibility to this field so that people don't immediately want to call and put you in a straitjacket when you approach somebody about the fact that you're wanting to go ghost hunting in their building. And the actual owner, whose name is Ian Garfinkel, was very open to it. And we talked, and obviously there was some compensation, you know, to shut down his establishment. But that was pretty much it. I think he was relieved that it was a small crew, so that he wasn't having to worry as much about any type of damage with the equipment and that kind of thing. But for the most part, yeah, we went in on a Tuesday. We got there about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and we were there until sunup the next day. It's one of the longest shooting days I've done before, as far as
Now, I have not seen the pilot because it's still under wraps. I know that you're in the process of talking with some cable channels, but that there is a trailer out in the wild. Where can people find the trailer?
We have it on your basic internet stuff right now. It is on YouTube and it is on Facebook. And the actual locations are Cradle to the Grave TV. And on Facebook, you just spell out all in one word, Cradle to the Grave TV. And then on YouTube, you have to use the number 2. And it's all spelled one long word, which I didn't particularly like because I don't think that's user-friendly, but that was the way that we got it up. So far, the hits on it, I don't want to toot my own horn, and I had a lot of help from a good close friend of mine that I've worked with for over a decade, but we're really, really proud of the opening, and it personifies what we're trying to get across as the concept for the pilot.
Yeah, I have to confess here, it was the trailer that I first learned about the project. Mike and I have a mutual acquaintance. His name is Charlie Boswell. By day, he has the glorious title of being AMD's Director of Digital Media. By night, he's a musician and filmmaker and general troublemaker. I happened to call him up not long ago, just to talk. You know, hey Charlie, how's it going? What mischief are you up to these days? And he said, oh, let me show you a little trailer I put together. And that was how I got involved. I mean, the one thing I have to admire about Charlie is that he's a computer weenie, but boy, he is really good at the more esoteric stuff. You know, the art stuff. I mean, I think he's done a fabulous job with that trailer.
Yes.
No,
yes,
he's very good at what he does.
He did the music score for it, and he and I did the edit together. It's like you said, it's really interesting to watch him because the fact that he is able to go on both sides of the coin, you know, so to say, because most people are either musically inclined or like I am with film and video, but most of the people who are artistic like that do not understand the other side of it where that you have to know computers and software and all of those type things to get you what you're visualizing in your head. And Charlie is able to transition through that. And even when we were working on it, I used the terminology that I was watching an engineer learn how to do art. And I don't know if Charlie took that as a positive thing, because I think he honestly thinks of himself more as an artist, and he just happened to, you know, learn engineering along the way to get him to the points where that he's wanting to go, you know, musically, because I know he's wanting to do composition and things like that, which we've collaborated on. And actually, how I first met him is he did the music score for a feature film that I did a little over a decade ago. And it got released by Cinemark and Regal Theaters. And I think it was in large part due to the music score that he did for the show.
Right. He is a truly interesting character. I believe that it all started out when he went to university and he was studying music. And for some reason, you know, halfway through, he went, I think I'll do engineering instead.
Well, he may have wanted to make sure he had the day job to secure the food so
right.
that he could do the artistic side of it.
Totally. Yeah, that could very well be. But he is incredibly smart on the engineering stuff, by the way. He, I know he holds a fistful of patents.
I'm very fortunate to get the opportunity to collaborate with him on stuff. We've also worked on, there's a concert that we shot a while back that we're finishing up. And, he just puts this artistic touch on it that is absolutely amazing. He does great work.
Yeah, absolutely. No, he's awesome.
Oh, Lord, that'll make his head swell. Let's go back to Cradle to the Grave. But there are indeed a couple of TV programs that explore the world of the paranormal. You mentioned one of them.
Oh yeah.
Ghost Hunters. But there's something that always nags at me about these programs, and I think it's the perceived lack of balance, perceived in by me, that is. You know, that they seem bound and determined to find something.
No, I totally agree, because I hear what you're saying, and yes, I agree, because, because we're not going to name shows, but some of the stuff, it's like every show, it's like they find something, and it's evil or bad and whatever, and I'm like, come on now, that's ridiculous.
Mike, off air, we talked a little bit. I think you're the skeptic in the mob.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what I'm trying to bring to it, even though I'm behind camera, is that if I'm the person sitting at home watching that, you know, normally I'll go, well, somebody could have just been on the other side of the door or whatever, knocking or this or that, and that's why I'm trying so hard to make sure that every bit of any evidence that we get is 100% credible, whether I can explain it or not. I just want to make sure that it couldn't have been tainted some way. And that is the concern I have with the shows that are out there right now, is that I don't know, and again, I don't know with them having to hit time frames, and also my biggest concern is I think because of ratings, that they feel compelled that they have to find stuff. And that would be something different about our show, is that if we went to a location and actually didn't find anything, that would be what we would report to people. Because
and you, Simon,
go ahead.
Oh, no, I agree that the fact that most places are not necessarily haunted, that's ridiculous.
I think if you produce a program with some balance, you'll get much much greater credibility with the viewing audience, because you'll appeal to a wider segment. Actually, Mike, is that an angle that you're using in your discussions with the cable networks?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is, because that's to me, that's the necessity for this show, is the fact I like the perspective of all female, but also the fact that you do have the sound engineer that we had doing the recording was much more of a skeptic than I was. So you know, it was very across the board, because you have several people who obviously are there believing that they're going to find something, and then you had people who weren't necessarily disbelieving, but it's like, I want something concrete and tangible, and that's what I'm personally looking for, you know, outside of what we're trying to do with the show, because everybody eventually is going to cross over. And what I'm trying to do is see if I can figure out exactly how that happens, and if, you know, there's proof that, you know, there's so many questions about what happens after you die, and that's, you know, without actually having done that yet, that's what this show is for me, is I'm trying to figure out and see where that things are heading for me later on.
Assuming the program does get picked up, and I won't mention any cable TV channels, because I don't think that would be that would be good. Do you have a roadmap of you know, other locations that you want to explore?
Well, again, like I said earlier, one of the things I would like to do is to try to go to places that have not been, I guess you would say, overly investigated, because like with my wife mentioning the Stanley, and another place that's extremely actively pursued is called Waverly Hills in Kentucky. And I think it would just be kind of neat to go to places that have, so I don't know if you'd call it virgin territory or not, but I would like to try to pursue places like that to just see about finding things that nobody had found before. So myself personally, you know, it would depend on the network and what the thoughts were as far as the direction of the show. But on a personal level, that's something that I would like to do, is to go to locations that hadn't been frequented very often.
Right, but, you know, let's pretend for a moment I'm the cable exec, and I go, okay, Mike and Lisa, this is great. Let's do it. So where are we going next? I mean, do you have that next list?
Actually, we do. We do, because usually when they pick up a pilot, they will go ahead and purchase a series of eight, and then they go ahead and shoot those, and then obviously they broadcast those and see what type of reaction they get and that type of stuff before you get picked up for an additional season. But yes, we absolutely have locations that we want to go to.
Lisa, I know that you know, you're a nurse,
mm-hmm.
And while your hours may not be 9 till 5, they are fairly regular hours. Is it going to be a problem carving time out to get involved with Cradle to the Grave?
Actually, that's one of the benefits of what I'm doing, because with me being a nurse, my shifts are 12-hour shifts, basically. And so even with me being full-time, I'm only committed to 3 nights a week. And so I can balance my shifts around, you know, according to us doing investigations and so forth. And also, too, I have a number of continuing education hours that, you know, that I can do. And so I'm very flexible. So basically I can do whatever I need to do to go someplace. If I have to go somewhere for 3 or 4 days, I can do it. It's not a problem. That's one of the benefits of my job.
It's, yeah, I mean, this sounds great. I take it that you're both pretty excited about this program.
Absolutely.
Very.
All right. Being realistic here, how soon do you think you're going to get the green light?
I'm certainly hoping within the next quarter of this year with us going ahead and doing programs like yours. Obviously, it helped advertise for us. There's a convention in September called Scarefest. It's one of the largest horror conventions in the United States, and we'll be attending that with a booth and stuff. And at that point, you know, we're going to have at least, you know, segments of the finished pilot to hopefully show to executives and stuff, which I would expect would be at an event like that. And then just plugging away and knocking on doors. I mean, that's the only way, is doing self-promotion, because if you're sitting at home waiting for something to happen, you'll still be sitting at home next year waiting for something to happen.
Oh,
and so,
oh, yeah.
And so that's how we're looking at this. I mean, the film I was talking about from a decade ago, we took that from concept with no budget and actually got it in theater chains. And so I feel very confident. I'm going to have to do the little P.T. Barnum and self-promote. But the key thing is, I think we have a completely unique concept. And I think that, along with the need with so many more television stations coming online, that there is a tremendous need for product. And I think ours would be one of the better products out there. So that's what we're shooting for.
I have to admit that even though I am a skeptic, this is the type of program that I would sit and watch, you know, just to see, is Mike going to bust them this week?
Hey, I'm curious,
well,
is that something,
would you go
on an investigation if you were given the opportunity? Because
yes,
I've talked to some people who are just scared to death and wouldn't even possibly consider it, because you end up walking around in the dark for hours at a time, and they're intrigued by it, but they would want no hands on. You know, it's like going on the roller coaster ride, but I wouldn't want to go up in a ship or something. You know, I want to be close to the risk, but not take the risk.
Right.
Because that's what I was going to say. Because as far as, like, the goals, it seems very simplistic, but the bottom line is finding answers. So it's something that everybody wants to know, is, like, what happens after you die? And none of us really know what that answer is. And I hate to kind of quote Stephen King, but death is the ultimate equalizing factor, is the fact that we each owe a death. There is no exceptions. And none of us really like that answer, and so we want to know what happens after that fact.
Right. In fact, on that theory, you know, that I don't know how many books have been published on the subject, how many TV shows and movies have talked about it. Not everyone, though, becomes a ghost. Do you have any theories on why some do and some don't?
Honestly, because I was raised Southern Baptist, and I have issues with that and so forth, and that my research as far as other religions and things like that, I do think that most people, that there is a path that they go to, and they go and they're gone. But I do think there's a small fraction that there's issues with how they died or whatever transpired, you know, in their life, that they're angry, or, you know, if it was a violent death or if there was something with children, whatever, that they have issues crossing over, whatever crossing over means. And that is part of why they're still here. But on the same factor, I still think, too, because we emit energy, and what we do emits energy, that you can have a kind of like a movie thing that it recycles itself, that when you go to a location, you can feel what people were doing in that building or whatever, and it's just playing back over and over, and it's just, it's not them, it's just their energy in that location. But like I said, that, and as far as people, I do think for the most part people do cross over. I do think there's a small factor of people that stay around for whatever reason, and that's part of what we do, is trying to get the science and the evidence to show that that's what's happening.
Alas, we're just about flat out of time, so I'm going to need to close this interview up. Mike and Lisa, I really want to thank you for taking time out this morning to talk to me, and I'm sure I speak for everyone at Blogger News in wishing you every success. And I do hope that you will both keep in touch with me. I'd love to follow your quest in bringing Cradle to the Grave to fruition. So once again, thank you both for coming on this morning.
Thank you very much for having
us.
And if we end up in Mississippi, we'll make you be true to your word and come do an investigation with us.
Oh,
yes,
I'd be delighted.
Absolutely.
Preferably find a haunted saloon. I rather like the one that the Horton Hotel. You said it had the world's longest continuously running saloon.
Yes, the Holbrook.
West of the Mississippi at the Holbrook.
Right. Now, that's definitely my kind of deal.
That's your kind of spirit?
Absolutely. Again, Lisa and Mike have to run here, but thank you so much, and good luck. Have a great day. Till next time. Thank you so much.
Have a great day.
My pleasure. Till next time, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe day. And we'll be back again. Till next time, goodbye.